house in private palace, summoned Jesus and asked him, "Are you the king of the Jews?" "Is that your own idea?" Jesus asked. "Or did others talk to you about me?" "Am I a Jew?" Pilate replied. "It was your people and your chief priests who handed you over to me. What is it you have done?" Jesus said, "My kingdom is not of this world. If it were, my servants would fight to prevent my arrest by the Jews. But now my kingdom is from another place." "You are a king then," said Pilate. Jesus answered, "You are right in saying I am a king. In fact, for this reason I was born, and for this I came into the world, to testify to the truth. Everyone on the side of truth listens to me." "What is truth?" Pilate asked. With this he went out again to the Jews and said, "I find no basis for a charge against him."
Undesigned scriptural coincidences. And I believe this is one of the main reasons why we can actually trust Gospels, that they are what God has intended for us. And we can only see this when we compare other Gospels together, different accounts. So, in Luke 23, verses 1 to 4, which was expertly read earlier, we see that Jesus is accused of things like subverting the nation of Israel. He opposes payment of taxes to Caesar. They say that he claims to be the Messiah, a king, somebody that was expected to overthrow the enemies of Israel. So Pilate asked Jesus, "Are you the king of the Jews?" And Jesus says, "You have said so." Pilate, in that particular text, says, "I have no basis for charge against this man." Now, at first glance, this statement looks rather strange because Jesus just declared himself to be the king. The answer comes when you go into John's Gospel and you have slightly expanded reading of the same event. Here we see Pilate ask Jesus, "Are you the king of the Jews?" And Jesus responds, "Is that your own idea, or did others talk to you about me?" Pilate then says, "Your own people and chief priests handed you over to me. What is it that you have done?" Jesus responds, "Your kingdom is not, my kingdom is not of this world. If it were, my servants would fight to prevent my arrest. My kingdom is from another place." Pilate then asks, "Are you a king then?" And Jesus responds, "You say that I am. The reason I was born and came into the world is to testify to the truth." Pilate then says, "What is truth?" Pilate concludes, "I find no basis for a charge against this man." So we may ask, why is it in John that Pilate is asking Jesus whether he is king? The answer can be found in Luke 23:2, because it is there that we see the allegations made against Jesus, which are not recorded in John's Gospel. Similar thing can be found in Matthew's Gospel, which basically we see there that Jesus was struck, and then guards are saying to Jesus, "Prophesy, who struck you?" Now this, on its own, doesn't seem to make much sense. It's not until we go into the Luke's Gospel that we find out that Jesus was actually blindfolded of all this has happened. So what am I trying to say? We need to take hold of these truths. These are separate eyewitness accounts, testimonies of exactly the same event. I would also like to talk to you about something that's called probability within apologetics, Christian sort of discipline. And I would like to draw your attention to eight specific prophecies which we can fulfill, prophecy which we can look through in a second. And accidentally, there are actually over 300 that have been fulfilled in the life and death and resurrection of Jesus. This was noted by mathematician Peter W. Stoner. So he gives us eight such prophecies. For example, in Psalm 22, verse 18, they would divide his garments and cast lots for them. In Micah 5, 2 says, he would be born in Bethlehem. In Isaiah 7, 14 says that Jesus would be born a virgin. In Zechariah 11, 12 says that he would be betrayed for 30 pieces of silver. In Psalm 22, 7 and 8 says, he would be mocked. In John 3, 14, Jesus predicts that he would be crucified. In Psalm 22, verse 16, says that he would be pierced. In Isaiah 53, 9, says he would die with the wicked, but buried with the rich. Now, this is something I would like to draw your attention to. The chances of these eight prophecies, now, I'm just using these eight, as I said, there were more than 300, coming through by chance is 1 in 10 to the power of 17. Now that's astonishingly large number. The equivalent to this, Stoner puts it like this, is if we were to cover entire state of Texas with silver dollars 2 feet deep and then send a blindfolded person out to find one specific silver dollar marked and mixed up somewhere in the state of Texas. And this person would go out and find a silver dollar at his very first attempt. The Bible tells us that we deserve to be punished. The Bible tells us we fall short of the glory of God. We are all sinners. Yet, the Bible also tells us that God is love. The whole story that we look today is about love. God also tells us through his word that he is also righteous. Sin must be paid for in order for you and me to be reconciled to him, to our Father. Now I want to take you back to the first century. I want you to imagine this. As Jesus is hanging there, his skin would have been ripped to pieces after receiving 39 lashes. He was being nailed to the cross. He was in excruciating pain at this very moment. Yet, what Jesus does is quite remarkable. Jesus prays for those who are torturing him. He's saying, Father, forgive them, for they don't know what they're doing. So, as Clive earlier said, what was good about Good Friday? Or as in Eastern traditions say, Great Friday. Bible tells us that Jesus took our place on that cross. Bible also tells us that Jesus is our legal representative. He takes our case before the Father. As Jesus was hanging on that cross and as he exclaimed his last words, "It is finished," the Bible means to say, it's paid in full, task is accomplished. No contribution on our part is required. What was lost in the Garden of Eden through Adam and Eve has now been reclaimed on the cross by Jesus Christ. I want to tell you that Jesus entered human history to be one of us, to live, to die for our sins, and was raised so that you and I can have this promise of resurrection. We are offered this free gift of salvation, which we can accept by faith. I would like to conclude this little talk by simply reading something from Mere Christianity book written by C.S. Lewis. This is what he says. I'm trying to here to prevent anyone saying the really foolish thing that people often say about him. I am ready to accept Jesus as a great moral teacher, but I don't accept his claim to be God. This is the one thing we must not say a man who was merely a man, and said a sort of thing Jesus said, would not be a great moral teacher. He would either be a lunatic on a level with a man who says he's a poached egg, or else he would be the devil of hell. You must make your choice. Either this man was and is the Son of God, or else a madman or something worse. You can shut him up for a fool, you can spit at him and kill him as a demon, or you can fall at his feet and call him Lord and God. But let us not come with any patronizing nonsense about his being a great human teacher. He has not left that open to us. He did not intend to. And lastly, I would like to read from John 11:25, where Jesus said to Martha, "I am the resurrection and the life. Whoever believes in me will live, even if